If you would like to follow along in your Bibles, we're going to be reading from the first chapter of Colossians this morning, where we have been for the last few weeks, and we have been looking at this idea of the preeminence of Jesus Christ, and we're going to stay with that theme for quite a few weeks. We have seen that He's preeminent in everything that salvation means, as we looked at His work to come not just rescue us from the mess that we created, but rectify us, put us back on the course that God intended before the foundation of the world. He not only met some particular needs that we had, He closed all the gaps between the Creator God and the creature. And we are at this moment grateful, we'll be eternally grateful that Jesus Christ is preeminent in salvation. He has the first place in every aspect of what it means to be saved, to be Christian. We're going to take a look at His preeminence in a different fashion today in terms of His preeminence in creation. I think a couple of years ago I may have mentioned this particular story to you just as a way to get your attention, but I think it bears repeating. The story went like this about a little girl who asked her mother, how did the human race begin? And her mother was a very wise woman, as you'll see in more ways than one, and she said, long ago God made Adam and Eve. And they had children, and that's how the human race began, and we're descendants of Adam and Eve because their children spread all over the world. Well, a few days later, she asked her father the same question. How did the human race begin? And her father said, long ago, there were monkeys and apes, and we descended from monkeys and apes. Well, as you can imagine, that kind of got the little girl confused. So she went back to her mother and said, how can this be? You said we came from God and a historical couple called Adam and Eve, and that's why there are people on planet Earth today. And Dad said that we came from apes and monkeys. What's going on here? And this very wise mother said, well, I was just telling you about my side of the family, and your father was telling you about his side of the family. All right? Now, that's a cute little story. Doesn't have a whole lot to do with Genesis or anything else on one count, but I think it has a lot to do with many of us. Because I think a lot of us live in that confusion that this little girl was in. Because it seems that the Bible is pretty clear about telling us certain things about who we are and why we are and how we got here. And yet there are so many other things that we hear in school and from other authorities and experts that seem to run 180 degrees in the opposite direction from that. And so we're going to take this week and next week to talk about our origins as well as our destiny. Was it God or was it monkeys? Are you and I here by choice, or is there something called random chance at work, and that's the only reason for our existence? Are human beings spiritual beings, or are we simply material life forms? Those are questions that in some way, shape, or form you and I are going to have to answer. We can answer it. In fact, we are kind of answering it right now based on the way that we live, because are we believing and living as though the universe is a result of just random events, or is it a matter of choice, or is it chance? Or is everything that's going on around you and me, present company included, the result of a living creator, and that beyond the created realm there's a divine intelligence, a God who by choice decided that there was going to be life, and He was going to create beings in His image, and He was going to share His very life with for all of eternity. Because if that's true, then we do have a different storyline on our origins and our destiny. Maybe there isn't any other conviction that you and I are going to develop here that has more power to shape us than the decision we make about this particular question. The way we interpret our surroundings and the very self-image that we have, which is the lens through which we interpret so much of what's happening outside of us, is determined by how we perceive ourselves and what our origins and destiny are. We determine how we're going to perceive other people, how we're going to deal with adversity. And maybe nothing influences our worldview any more than the answer to this particular question. Are we creatures by chance or by choice? Now, my experience has been that both credible atheists or materialists and credible believers in God agree on one point. The choice to believe in one fashion of existence or the other may be the most important decision you and I will ever make. In other words, did God create the human being, or did the human being create God? Or as many would have us believe, did we create the idea, the concept of God as a survival mechanism? Is the whole idea and concept of God just merely an evolutionary adaptation to adapt to a very scary and unknown world out here and maybe even be able to deal with the fear of death itself? We've all answered that question in one shape or another. Is it by chance or is it by choice that we happen to be walking around down here on this planet? And since none of us were there when the whole thing began, the question is this: which will you choose to believe? Because there's an assumption at the bottom of both of these belief systems that is not yet, and for many of us choosing to believe otherwise, that never will be any proof. They're both belief systems about our origins. The question you and I will have to settle is to what or to where or to whom do most of the indicators, science included, do most of the indicators point? First question is this: is it going to point to materialism? Because that is one belief system. And the belief system of materialism assumes that everything that exists is fundamentally of one substance, matter. That the material realm constitutes everything. Every event that happens down here on this planet has a material cause. Everything that you see happening outside of you is governed by physical forces. And randomness and chance have shaped you and the world that you live in. Now, that's a very bottom line, simplistic view of materialism. That's one option. Or you've got the option of having a spiritual worldview. And those who happen to believe that there is more to life than just random and chance say that matter does matter, but there are matters out there that matter more than matter. All right? You won't find that in a science book across the street, but that's one of the ways to look at it. In other words, the material realm is very real, and matter itself is very, very real, but it's only partial reality. The fullness of what we call reality has to be derived from a spiritual or eternal realm in which there is a creator God. And this God resides in that realm and He rules in that realm over what takes place down here on this planet. Now, those of you who've been here before know my heart. You know my bias. And I would assume those of you who've never been here before, because you're in a Christian church today, you understand what my bias is going to be. I really want to clearly bear witness to what I believe to be true in these matters today, what's real, and what we can trust God for. But I want to make this clear. I have absolutely no use for the rhetoric and the ridicule that comes from both of these systems. If all you and I can do is make fun of materialists, and if all of materialists can do is out of their anger and fear make fun of those who believe in the spiritual worldview, all that reveals is some deep-seated insecurities. I don't believe we have to fall to that kind of ridicule or use that kind of rhetoric to make our points. I'll be honest with you, I am not prepared to argue on the paleontological level or the molecular biological level the deficiencies of materialism nor the adequacies of a spiritual worldview. I know lots of people who can do that. There are some people in this congregation who can do that and do it well. There are lots of credible experts in both belief systems that are prepared to do that. But I am prepared to argue this morning, that man's basic need to know something about our origins and about our destiny speaks to the God-designed need to know our Creator from whom all the blessings of life flow. In other words, almost everybody that I know is searching for what is real and what is truth. And in my mind, I'm convinced because there is truth and there is reality behind everything that you see. Almost everybody I know, believer or not, or somewhere in between, wants to know who and why we're here. I believe that's because we have been made in the image of a personal God who intends to share His life with us. Almost everyone I know, I've met a few people who've given up on this, but almost everyone I know is striving for meaning and purpose in their lives. How many times have you been disappointed and you've just said, if I could just understand what was going on here, I think I could handle this. If I knew there were a purpose in this, then maybe I could deal with it a little more effectively. So almost everybody that I know is searching for meaning and purpose, and I believe that's because the God of all meaning has made us for His purposes. Those are the questions that God has written into the fabric of our souls. But I make no bones about it. It is my position, and it is a faith position. It is my faith position that divinity, that a personal God, constitutes the reality of everything that's real and true in our world. Everything that is ultimate and absolute in answer to those questions comes from this purposeful and personal God. And I'm convinced of His promise that's in the 11th chapter of Hebrews. He who searches for me with all of his heart will find me. All right, having said that, I don't believe we as Christians ever need to be afraid of science. I grew up around some people who were afraid of science. I don't think you ever need to be afraid of science. God is the greatest of all scientists. He's the ultimate chemist. He's the uber physicist. He knows everything there is to know about chemical compounds and about the laws of nature, as we call them. I think everything that you and I can objectively observe, and everything that we can measure, and everything that we can quantify, if we can somehow do that from an unbiased position, is going to ultimately point to Him. I didn't suggest it's going to prove Him, because I don't believe you can ever prove God with human intellect. I don't believe you can ever prove God just by objective observation, because that does not determine all of reality. Reality, as we know it, has the component of revelation in it. That there are some things that cannot be known through purely human observation. There are some things that can only be known by divine revelation. So I'm not suggesting you and I are ever going to be able to prove God through science. But I think we also have to come to grips with this. There are certain questions that science alone is not ever going to be able to answer. I don't think there's anyone yet who's credible as a scientist who says, through science, we can tell you what the meaning of life is all about. Through our scientific measurements, we can describe to you why you are here. Through science, we can absolutely prove to you what happens after you die. And through our scientific observations, even in a sociological or anthropological sense, we can definitively tell you what is right and wrong and what is good and evil. I don't know any credible scientist who said we can answer those questions for you. Maybe there are some indicators, but nothing that can answer them in an absolute sense. But I don't believe there's any need for us as Christians to choose between science and Christianity or spirituality. Science and God are not in opposition to one another. God can be as worshipped in the lab as He can in a church house like we're here doing this morning. But you must certainly choose between materialism and Christianity. You must choose between a materialistic or a spiritual worldview. Those two are incompatible. Those two are mutually exclusive. And I think all of us know who've seriously pursued answering some of these questions, we're going to find scientists and philosophers with the best of credentials on both sides of these arguments. And in fact, I don't consider myself to be an apologist, but if you like apologetics, I'm simply going to mention a website to you you might want to look at sometimes. Very simple one. www.4truth.net. www.4truth.net. Now, I'm taking anything that I'm going to tell you today from that website. But I'm simply telling you, as I've looked it over, it's pretty comprehensive and pretty, I think, objective in terms of how it presents truths about this particular subject. Well, let's go to the first chapter of Colossians, beginning with verse 15. Because I learned many, many years ago from God that it's not my powerful arguments that persuade people about the reality of God and His truth. And so the burden isn't upon me and some great intellectual presentation here today to overpower you with all the facts and convince you about the reality of God. The only one who can convince people about the reality of God is God. I also discovered a long time ago, against my better judgment as a human being and not as a God believer, that people don't even have to believe in the Bible to be convinced of the reality of God, because God can take His Word and make it living and convince somebody right on the spot who's never believed a word in it before. So I'm trusting the witness that I want to bear today is going to be used by the Holy Spirit. So that's why I want to start with these scriptures, the ones we've been reading in Colossians 1, verse 15. We're going to read about Jesus Christ. He, Jesus Christ, is the image of the invisible God. He is the firstborn of all creation. For by Him all things were created, both in the heavens and on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things have been created by Him and for Him. He is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. Now, I've circled all the alls in my Bible. You may not write in your Bible, but there's a theme there that we'll come back to in the coming weeks. He is also head of the body, the church, and He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that He Himself might come to have first place in all or everything. For it was the Father's good pleasure for all the fullness to dwell in Him, and through Him to reconcile all things to Himself, having made peace through the blood of His cross. Through Him, I say, whether things on earth or things in heaven. And although you were formerly alienated and hostile in mind, engaged in evil deeds, yet He has now reconciled you in His fleshly body through death, in order to present you before Him holy and blameless and beyond reproach. Who's Paul writing about here? Paul's writing about the uncreated Creator. And in the 15th verse of 1 Colossians chapter 1, he's stating Christ's relationship to God. And he says this about Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the image of the invisible God. We talked about this a few weeks ago. When Paul uses that word image, he uses the Greek word icon. You know, a representation, a manifestation of the hidden, opening the door, the portal to even more than you can see. When you punch an icon on a computer, it opens a portal that opens a door to all kinds of things that are hidden behind that icon. And this is what Paul is saying about Jesus Christ. If you will punch on to the person of Jesus Christ in faith, if you will look at Him, He is the perfect representation of God. Everything that you need to know about this uncreated Creator is hidden in the person of Jesus Christ. And He is such an accurate representation of God that He perfectly reveals God to man. In other words, Paul's writing to the Colossians, and the Spirit is saying to us still today, just as strongly, Jesus Christ is no man-made image of God. He was made by God Himself. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. I'm not implying Jesus Christ is a created being. We're going to look at that in just a minute. But as God incarnate, born of a Virgin Mary, He's a God-made image of God. Everything that is God rests inside of Him. Only God, this is how Paul's forming his argument, only God can perfectly reveal God. Only God can fully reveal God. The universe and the creation, as orderly and as magnificent as it seems to be to most people, cannot fully reveal the nature of God because it's impersonal. It certainly speaks to us about an intelligent designer. It speaks to us about order. It speaks to us about cosmos instead of chaos. But it doesn't tell us everything about God. God had to come in person to do that. Jesus Christ alone is the full and perfect revelation or representation of who God is to the human race. Now look at verse 16. He says something about Jesus Christ in relationship to creation. He says in verse 16, by Him all things were created. Now that seems to be a contradiction to verse 15, because Paul says He's the firstborn of all creation. Well, wait a minute. Firstborn. He created everything. How did that happen? Well, you're thinking like an American, not a Hebrew. Hebrew people would think of a firstborn in a totally different fashion. Paul's not suggesting there was a time when Jesus Christ was not. He always was. He made that clear when he said in verse 17, He is before all things. There never is a time when Jesus Christ was not. But in Hebrew thought, firstborn was never, I won't say never, firstborn was almost always used only in reference to honor, not in reference to chronology. You can back and read in the 89th Psalm, verse 27, where God said of David, He is my firstborn. Now, King David was not the first person ever created by God on this planet. That would be a foolish assumption to make. When God says, David is my firstborn, He says, as king, He has highest honor. And He says both of those in Psalm 89:27. He also says of Israel in the fourth chapter of Exodus, the 22nd verse, Israel is my firstborn. There was no nation of Israel before Abraham, and there were many people before Abraham. So God is not talking about chronology. He's talking about a position of honor. To be firstborn is to have the highest position of honor at all. And when you look at the context, that's exactly what Paul is talking about. He's saying, Jesus Christ, all things were created by Him. He's before all things. The uncreated Creator of everything, He has priority over all of creation. He is its acknowledged head. He created it all. He says in verse 17 that Jesus Christ, in Him all things hold together. He is its sovereign Lord. You know, everything in this cosmos, everything in this universe, everything in creation is held together as an expression of the heart of the Lord Jesus Christ. All the laws and principles of the universe reside in Him. Now, if you're just looking from a purely human point of view, below the line, in a created sense, we call that science. If you're looking from an eternal perspective or from a Christian or spiritual point of worldview, we call that the mind of Christ. There is no incompatibility between science and the mind of Christ. All the laws and principles of the universe that keep our feet on the ground and keep things functioning in the order that they do operate that way because the mind of Jesus Christ holds them in that fashion. That's the point that Paul's making here as clearly as anything else. It's the thought of gravity in the heart or in the mind of God that keeps everything in place. Listen, it's also His thought of love for you that holds you and me together. And Paul's establishing without question that Jesus Christ is the center of all creative power. He's the center of all creative unity. He holds it all together. And so he's suggesting to the church at Colossae, why would you focus on anything else? They were constantly being distracted by lesser things. They were worshiping lesser gods. They were worshiping angels and self-help and ascetic practices and special knowledge. So when Paul puts it all together, he says, Jesus Christ has absolute preexistence. He's before all things. He has absolute sovereignty over everything because He created it and holds it together. And when you have absolute preexistence joined to absolute sovereignty, He has absolute preeminence. He is to have the first place in everything. In fact, we read verses 19 through 22, even though they don't deal with creation, they deal with recreation. Paul's making the point, it is your Creator, the One who made you, the One who sustains you, the One who holds you together, the One who loves you. He came in person to deliver you. He came in person to recreate you. And since He Himself is our personal Creator, any theory, any explanation of the universe has to be a personal theory or explanation. That's why all of our mechanical models for life as we know it always come up short. That's why the biological models of stimulus and response alone will never tell you who you are. Because you're more than just a living organism made in the image of this God. It will always fall short. Every model that explains the reality of the universe has to be a personal model if it was made by the person of God through Jesus Christ. He comes in person to rescue us and take care of us. That's why our scientific models are excellent for what they're able to do, but they're somewhat narrow approaches to ultimate reality. They're somewhat narrow approaches to the fullness of knowledge. Pure material analysis falls short of explaining reality as a whole. It does a very good job of explaining one segment of reality, but not everything that's ultimate and true and real. Think about it for just a minute, because if the common theories of random and chance mutation described who we are, and if it's merely about survival of the fittest, then why can't science explain why caloric intake and species reproduction isn't enough for most human beings? I mean, you go to the end of your day and said, I took enough calories today, had an opportunity to reproduce, I'm a human being. That made my life worth living today. That's the bottom line. Chance and randomness and what it's all about. In fact, if you talk again to credible scientists, they don't even have to be believers in God. They will tell you science observes and reports but explains very little, if anything. Science isn't just totally free to interpret. It can quantify and measure and observe and report and describe, but science explains very little. That's where the Bible comes in with the missing pieces. They yield an explanation for creation as well as the human condition. An intelligent and eternal, uncreated Creator has made you and me in His image. And He's placed us in an orderly and purposeful universe. All of the alls that we just read about in those few verses of the universe are from Him. All of these alls are sustained by Him. And He says it's going back to Him. Everything was created for Him. It's going back to Him as glory and praise. And the key to it all is the person of Jesus Christ. Paul says He's the Lord of all cause and effect. He created you. He loves you. He came in person to rescue you, and now He wants to recreate you. In Him are your origins, and origins determine destiny. In Him is your destiny. It is by His choice, in other words, and not by chance, that you and I are here. Now, we're only going to be able to cover one half of this week, and we're going back to the second half next week. But we're going to look just very briefly, in a very simple way, at the case for chance. Next week, we'll look at the case for choice. And this is certainly a vast oversimplification due to the time constraints that we have. But what we're talking about when we speak of the case for chance, we're talking about materialism, a material philosophy. Life by chance, if you will. Materialism is a monistic philosophy. And that means very simply that everything that exists is fundamentally of one substance. That's what monism is. One substance, and that substance is matter. In other words, if you're going to be a credible materialist and buy in to that way of thinking, everything in life has a material cause. Everything that happens in the universe is governed by physical forces. Materialism alone determines everything that works. So whatever happens in creation, whatever happens in the human brain, is caused by some current, local, or electrical, or mechanical source of causation. That's materialism in a nutshell. There's no design, there's no purpose to it, there's no evil, there's no good about it. There aren't even any real choices to make. In fact, when you read or talk to people who are credible, living, materialists, they will tell you up front and honestly, in fact, whatever you think to be the human soul, mind, will, the freedom to choose, is just an illusion. It's just an illusion created by the electrical firing of neurons in your brain. There can't be any real you with a separate sense of consciousness. That doesn't fit into the materialistic program. In reality, there's no you at all out there. You is also an illusion. There's no real human self to control. There's no self that controls anything. That when you come right down to it, in a purely materialistic view of life, humans are just skin bags of chemical reactions and electrical charges. We're merely biological organisms in competition with all the other life forms out there for existence and survival. So our origins, in other words, are purely material. And the human race is here entirely by chance. And I quote from Apprentice Hall textbook, "We're products of undirected material causation. Life as we know it is the result of random and chance mutations without design or purpose." Now that does raise a question. Many questions, but one question in particular, the only one we'll address at the moment. How did a prebiotic environment, how did a pre-life environment in which there were no living organisms, a realm with no life whatsoever, give rise to life without transmission of life from another realm or source? This model does raise that question. And again, if you're speaking to a credible materialist, someone who literally believes in chance and think all the indicators of the universe, science in particular, point in that direction, will honestly say, "We don't know." That's how you know you're speaking with a credible materialist. We don't know how that happened. Some have theorized that aliens from another realm have dropped life into the primeval soup, and that resulted in life on this planet. And there are credible Nobel Prize winners who held to that theory in the last half of the 20th century. But we don't know where that original life came from. Here's what we think. Here's what we believe. Here's what we think all the indicators are pointing to. The first single-celled material life forms develop step by step over eons. And somehow, we don't know yet. We think someday we're going to find out. Now, is that a faith position or not? I want you to understand, both of these are belief systems. Because you've been led to believe there's something stupid about you because you have a belief or a faith system. You have a little God in the gaps theory going over here. You can't explain it either, but God will show up in the gaps to explain what it's all about. This is just as much faith. We don't know. Here's what we think. We believe someday everything in science is going to point to this. But all of the amino acids necessary to build the proteins required for life forms somehow arrange themselves in all the correct sequences at a precise moment somewhere out there in this primeval sea or soup. And the genetic code, as we know it today, was created. And translation devices arose which transformed this meaningless code into the beginnings of life. And over the course of time, chance mutation and natural selection produced all the features of life as we know it today. And there's science that does point in that direction. I'm not trying to make fun of anything. I don't believe in that approach. I'm simply telling you this is what a credible materialist will tell you. Well, let's take just a few minutes to look at some of the weak or missing links in this materialistic chain of thought. Think in terms of these four words: mind, morality, mutations, and meaning. Okay? Because if you're going to be a credible materialist and you're going to believe that we're here by chance and everything is about randomness, you've got to maintain that there's no real distinction between mind and matter. There's no difference between mind and brain and soul. In fact, what we think to be the mind is just a byproduct of electrical activity in the brain. And if that's true, then all of your thoughts are ultimately meaningless. You've got to come to that logical conclusion. There's no other logical middle ground. In fact, one materialist said this: we are merely living out our genetic predestination. So you thought religious people only believed in predestination. That's not true. Materialists believe in predestination. We are merely living out our genetic predestination. That we are not making anything happen. There's no real you in there making free choices. I have to say this, at least I have respect for the older, more credible atheists than the ones writing all the books today. If you want to read a real hardcore atheist, and you want to read some people who are very credible in terms of their conclusion, go read Bertrand Russell, go read Jean-Paul Sartre, go read Camus, go read Nietzsche. I've read them all. And they were all materialists. And every single one of them came to this thought: there's only one possible conclusion if what we believe is true. Nihilism. The absolute meaninglessness to everything in life. Bertrand Russell said the only conclusion you can come to if you are a materialist is utter despair. At least I respect the older atheists. They were consistent. They were logical. And they lived out of their utter despair. They wrote books like No Exit. There's no way to get out of this. We're just trapped in this meaningless kind of existence. And there is no meaning to right and wrong and false and true. Secondly, think morality. If the world is simply the product of amoral forces, then morality, or at least any standard for it, can't exist. It can't. This is one of the logical conclusions that opened the door to C.S. Lewis believing in a personal God. In other words, if you listen to a credible materialist, he'll tell you this, and I quote, "All behavior is survival mechanism in disguise." That's all behavior is. You behave in a way that gets you through your day. You behave in a way that gets your needs met. You behave in a way that gets other people to notice you and pay attention to you and meet the deepest core needs of your life. It's a survival mechanism in disguise. And without morality, or without a standard for morality, there is no right and wrong. You and I cannot ever accuse anyone else of doing anything evil, because there's no good and evil. There's no moral high ground for anyone to stand on. Because you see, morality can only be described in terms of evolutionary benefit and failure. If we're just the product of amoral forces, morality can only be described in terms of evolutionary benefit and failure. And you know what the key concept or the key thought is in terms of evolution? Evolution favors selfishness, doesn't it? Survival of the fittest, man. I'm sorry. If a bear is chasing me, as long as I'm faster than you, we're okay. Right? Survival of the fittest favors selfishness. So if you've got any standard for valuation from logical materialism, you've got to favor self for selfness. That's the bottom line. That must be our highest good in a materialistic model. What about mutations? Scientists tell us today that mutations mostly delete, not add information to the genetic code. I quote again, "There is no known beneficial mutation that does anything to produce a new strain or variety except within the same species." It's not believers in Christ credible materialist. No new known biological structures are ever formed that we've found to date. All right, so there's a faith position in all of that. In other words, materialism tells us for life to have occurred, all the coordinated pieces of the puzzle need to be in place in a particular way so the components can make sense and function together. And the odds for this happening are astronomically high. Listen to the astrophysicist Fred Hoyle. He says the odds of life arising spontaneously and self-assembling, okay, so the odds of all of these amino acids and proteins all getting together at the right place and assembling themselves in the right way at the right time by some spontaneous kind of reaction is like that of a whirlwind going through a junkyard assembling a ready-to-fly Boeing 747. That was his assessment of the odds, if you just want to talk science and odds. Now, here's Dr. Francis Crick, Nobel Prize winner. He was one of the co-discoverers of everything that we know about DNA today, all right? And he said this, the probability of getting just one protein to form in a single-cell organism has multiple proteins. But the odds of just getting one protein to form by choice would be 1 in 10 to the 260th power. Okay, that's a 1 with 260 zeros behind it. This guy was a scientist. He knew what he was talking about. All right? Now, mathematicians usually consider anything above 1 to the 50th power as an absolute impossibility. 1 in 10 to the 50th power would be absolutely impossible. Francis Crick says this is 1 to 260th power. The law of thermodynamics points us in the same direction, that the bent of nature, as we know that law, is toward disorder and degradation. We call that entropy, right? I mean, in a very simplistic form, you could see it at work. You see, disordered states do not naturally or spontaneously come back together or accidentally. Ordered, organized states have to be formed or created by something. That's particularly true the more highly ordered and organized a system is. In other words, if I were to take a glass or a china plate and I were to drop it on the floor right now, it would break into hundreds, perhaps, of all different kinds of sizes and pieces. Do they ever order or organize themselves back together? That's thermodynamics. That's entropy. Unless someone steps in with the intent, purpose, and ability to organize them and put it all together, it isn't ever going to reassemble itself. The awesome elegance of a highly ordered human life, and as others have argued, the irreducible complexity of even a single cell life form begs for an intelligent designer or creator. I'll make one more quote. Richard Dawkins, not exactly a fan of Christianity or intelligent design or any thought of God, a very vociferous opponent to God and creation. This is what Richard Dawkins himself says. Biology is the study of complicated things which give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. Isn't that interesting? Richard Dawkins would say biology is the study of very complicated things that would give the appearance of having been designed for a particular purpose. In short, design and purpose is somewhat obvious, even to people who don't want to believe in God. The question is the design and purpose apparent or is it real? What about meaningfulness in human life? Materialism, life by chance, is yet to develop a real compelling narrative or ethic of what it means to be human. Because if in the beginning it was all by chance, if in the beginning there's nothing behind it, and if in the end there's nothing about it, then everything in the meantime seems to be much ado about nothing. See, there's not a whole lot of logical middle ground between utter meaningfulness and utter meaninglessness. There's not a lot of logical middle ground to stand on and defend. There's nothing materialism has to say about meaning and purpose and value. However, if you really, really, really want to be your own God, it would be a great idea to jumpstart the universe without one, wouldn't it? That would make a lot of sense. Let's go back to Colossians 1:16 for our conclusion. Because the Bible maintains there is more information than what science can give us. It never discredits science. I've said it clearly as I know how. I don't think we ever need to be afraid of anything that science discovers in the paleontological or molecular biological level. We're going to talk a little bit more about that next week. But I don't think there's any problem with anything that's being genuinely discovered. But the Bible maintains some of the missing information that we would have comes by revelation. And there's nothing illogical or unreasonable about having the component of revelation into your belief system. We've already seen that certain components of materialism are assumptions of faith as well. Not every position is tenable in terms of its ability to be proven by scientific observation. But listen to Colossians 1:16 for some of the missing pieces. For by Him, by Jesus Christ, all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible. See, there's an invisible realm that science just cannot observe, no matter how its technology develops or increases. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created by Him and for Him. What does the Bible maintain? That the ultimate fact of the universe is not matter. The ultimate fact of the universe is not survival. The ultimate fact of the universe is not chance. There's nothing random about it. The ultimate fact of the universe is a divine personal creator. There is an uncreated creator behind everything that you and I see. And this creator is a person with a primary cause. In other words, our God has a plan. He planned, according to Paul, to create a universe. And the universe itself would be the theater of His glory. That was a part of what our God planned to do. Humans were created in His image and placed on the stage of this theater to enter into a relationship with Him that lasts not only for the realms that we would measurably call time and space, but all of the realms that go beyond those human measurements. And we would exist for His glory, and we would be created in His image with the capacity to receive His very life and demonstrate it throughout the created realm and then live in it forever in a newly created heaven and earth. Our God had an instrumental cause. In other words, He had the power to do it. Our God is able to create by His Word. Call it bio-logos, if you will. Life by the Word. That God can create something out of nothing. The very fact that even everything that we call science today is pointing toward at least some point where there was a beginning tells us there was something before in the beginning that had to make the beginning happen. And that something is a someone, and He spoke creation into being out of nothingness. He didn't need any pre-existent matter. There was a time when there was no time. There was a time when there was no space. There was a time when there was no matter. And our uncreated eternal God spoke it into being by His Word. He has the power to create and to create in a way that honors and glorifies Him. He has the power to sustain that creation. And by His Word, He has the power today to recreate you and me. Here's where our hope comes from in daliness. And Paul makes it clear, even in that 16th verse, there's a final cause to all this. There's a purpose as well. He is summing up everything that He created and every being in His image into the person of Jesus Christ for His glory. So all of this, the plan, the power, the purpose, are placed in a person, Jesus Christ. And He is to us the source and the guide and the goal of all creation. And that's why the Scriptures say you want to make Him preeminent. You want Him to be first place in everything in your life. Even after man rebelled and sinned, we read in chapter 1, verse 21, Paul said we were alienated and hostile. We became immoral beings, and the evil nature of the enemy himself took up some kind of power over us. And in the midst of that, this uncreated Creator demonstrated His forever love for us by coming in person to reconcile us to Himself, to bring us back into that original intent. The devil himself, Adam himself, and the sin of the human race could not stop our God from living out His eternal plan and intent. That's why all of our yearnings for peace and all of our cravings for love and all of our dreams for wholeness and all of our longing for eternity are not survival skills for a scary and meaningless world. These are the very voice of God saying, hello, I created you. I bought you with a price. With loving intent, I chose to fashion you after my image before the foundation of the world. I designed you specifically for my eternal purposes. Would you freely receive my uncreated life? Would you receive the mind of Jesus Christ? Would you receive the morality of Jesus Christ? Would you receive the recreative power of Jesus Christ? Would you receive the meaning that I had for you before my very first let there be? Because everything that you're looking for in this created realm is in my Son, Jesus Christ, the uncreated Creator. Receive Him and you'll learn how to think. Receive Him and you'll discover meaning. Receive Him and you'll know you're valuable. Receive Him and you'll understand the difference between right and wrong. That's why Paul says in Colossians 2, 9 and 10, in Him all the fullness of deity dwells in bodily form, and now in Him you're made complete. We are brought to completion as human beings, and we are brought to wholeness in the person of Jesus Christ. Every time you and I are craving for meaning, we're looking for wholeness. We sense that something's missing. It is the Spirit of God speaking to you and me saying, will you find your wholeness in me? Will you find your meaningfulness in me? The Christian gospel proclaims that you are a you, a real you. Not an illusion from the firing of chemicals and electrical charges in your brain as an adaptation mechanism for survival in a material world. You are a you created in the image of God, wanted by God, loved by God, designed and wanted and loved by this uncreated Creator before you ever showed up on planet Earth, which ought to say to you and me then, there is absolutely nothing in the created realm alone that can ever be our life source. There's where the despair comes from. There's where the emptiness comes from. There's where the meaninglessness comes from. The question is, will you and I give Him the preeminence? Will you dare to believe that every need, every question, every yearning is the invitation of God to give Jesus Christ first place in everything? And then you will not only know who you are, you will know why you are and what that means for all of eternity. Will you pray with me? Every one of us in this room has thought somewhat sub or unconsciously about our topic today. I believe all of us have thought consciously about it in more ways than we realize. In fact, I believe it affects every decision that we make in more ways than we realize. The Scriptures make clear that we have an uncreated Creator, an eternal God with a plan and a power and a purpose for His creation and everything in it. And everything that we need to enter into the intent and the action of God is in the person of Jesus Christ, and He is here freely wishing to give Himself to all of us. He is preeminent in creation, preeminent in our recreation. Will you give Him first place in everything? You're not giving Him something He doesn't already have. He has first place in everything. The refusal to acknowledge that in your life and mine is what brings so much of our despair. Will you dare to believe there is more to reality than what can be measured and quantified by the human brain? Do you dare to believe that you're more than just a skin bag of chemical reactions and electrical charges? Is that enough for you? Does that give you what you need to find meaningful life and make good decisions? Or could all of that be in a person who is waiting to freely give Himself to you and me? We believe this is a personal universe, not a mechanical one, not a biological one, not a material one. It is a personal universe made by the person of God Himself. He's inviting every one of us into His purposes through His Son, Jesus. Father, thank You for loving us so much that You demonstrated it. You didn't just give us information from a distance. You came here into the created condition and took upon Yourself the form of a man and experienced all of what we needed to be drawn into a communion with You. We thank You for the free gift of everything that is meaningful life in Your Son, Jesus Christ. And I pray through Him we would find all that we need to interpret our world as we leave this place today. And as we learn more and more what it means to give Him the preeminence, the first place in everything, more and more of His peace, more and more of His joy, more and more of His life power would become ours in experience as well. Pray it for my brothers and sisters in the name of Jesus Christ, who is our life. Amen.